teaching, learning, and upholding the way in Chan Buddhism. Dear friends, good evening, everyone. Tonight, I would like to discuss the special characteristics of Chan Buddhism by looking at teaching, learning, and upholding the way. First of all, what does Chan have to do with us? What benefits are there to understanding and practicing Chan? Once we understand Chan and find Chan, our worries will be fewer in life. Our views will no longer be distorted, and many contradictions and phenomenal differences will find resolution. With Chan, we will feel as light as a cloud and be at ease. Being rich or poor, or having or not having, will no longer matter. You will see through the illusions and vanities of this world and attain liberation and peace. Once we find Chan, our fears in life will disappear. That is, we will not fear birth and death. Once we find Chan, our minds will be composed, giving us strength. In response to any eventuality, when one's thoughts are focused in meditative concentration, one can experience the power of Chan and easily accomplish all his or her wishes. Chan is not for monastics only. Everyone can practice Chan. Whether you are a lay Buddhist, Muslim, Christian, Catholic, or Taoist, Chan is common to all religions. Let me tell you a story to help you understand Chan. There was once a famous Buddhist master called Fu Da Shi. Emperor Wu of the Liang Dynasty invited him to lecture on the sutras. Fu Da Shi ascended the platform, struck once with the ruler, and then sat down. Chan master Bao Zhi, who possessed supernatural power, noted to the emperor that Fu Da Shi's lecture on the Diamond Sutra is finished. That is the way Chan is. The best explanation, the most precise language, is to strike once with a ruler. Although nothing is said, everything is said. This is the exalted Chan world in which 10,000 conditions manifest without consequence as the body is unmoved in its original state. Another time, when Fu Da Shi was lecturing on the sutras, Emperor Wu of the Liang Dynasty entered his carriage for a visit. Everyone respectfully stood up to welcome him, but Fu Da Shi sat as impassive as Mount Tai. Someone hurriedly informed him, "The emperor is coming. Hurry and stand up." "If the Dharma ground moves," said Fu Da Shi, smiling, "everything will be imperiled. All power and wealth pale before the Chan method. With Chan, worldly fortune and glory suddenly seem to lose importance." On another occasion, Fu Da Shi was wearing the hat of a Taoist priest, a kasaya, the robe of a Buddhist monastic, and on his feet he wore the shoes of a Confucian scholar. Upon seeing him, Emperor Wu of the Liang Dynasty was perplexed. Astonished, he pointed at Fu Da Shi's hat and asked, "Are you a Taoist priest?" "No," replied Fu Da Shi, pointing at his kasaya. "I am a Buddhist monk in a kasaya." "You're a Buddhist monk? Look," said Fu Da Shi, pointing to his shoes. "Oh, a scholar's shoes. Are you a Confucian scholar?" Fu Da Shi waved his hand and pointed to his head. "Look, what am I?" "A Taoist hat, Confucian shoes, and a Buddhist robe. Three schools in one." The meaning of the story is that Chan encompasses everything. It is not something that belongs exclusively to a senior Buddhist monk living deep in the mountains. Chan is something that a Confucian, a Buddhist, and a Taoist all need. Something every member of a society needs. Therefore, I hope that what I say to you today, in this lesson about teaching, learning, and upholding the way in Chan Buddhism, will serve as a useful reference for you in your endeavors. When it comes to teaching and learning, the Chan method traditionally has emphasized transmission from teacher to student and teaching and learning to attain enlightenment. In many respects, Chan education is very different from the usual education as we know it today. Some of the differences include 1. The Dharma of Silence. In society today, teachers and parents alike advocate an education of loving speech, of teaching by using kind and gentle words. Oftentimes, Chan masters do not use words, but instruct face-to-face through silence. Silence, like a thunderclap, is grand and majestic, and louder and richer than language. 2. The Dharma of Beating and Shouting. Society today advocates a loving education, an education of remonstration with good intentions. But the Chan way emphasizes beating and shouting, a thunderclap to dispel ignorance and illuminate one's true nature. Examples of this approach to education are exemplified by the expression, "With one shout from Master Chan Mazu, Venerable Bai Zhang will be deafened for 3 days." And in the words of Chan masters Huang Bo and Lin Zhi, the way can be explained with 30 beatings. The way cannot be explained with 30 beatings. 3. The Dharma of Difficult Questions. Contemporary education stresses inspiring interest and guiding step by step. But the Chan way emphasizes asking difficult questions and challenging one's wits. As soon as one changes from being passively inspired to actively exploring, then one becomes a master and not a follower. 4. The Dharma of Toil. Today's education puts a premium on a quiet environment for learning, on providing a tranquil and conducive atmosphere for study. But the Chan method not only seeks to teach in a conducive atmosphere, but also to an even greater extent advocates learning through daily tasks. Thus, carrying firewood and water are ways of practicing Chan. Milling and threshing rice are ways of practicing Chan. Cutting and carrying firewood are both ways of practicing Chan. Through diligent work, one can gradually arrive at an understanding of the meaning of Chan and savor the Chan way. The implications of Chan can be elaborated through this style of teaching. Cold and warmth can be distinguished by a drink of water. Pain and pleasure can be distinguished by a fall. And one's own hardships are to be treasured and learned from. I would now like to briefly discuss 4 points regarding the special characteristics of teaching, learning, and upholding the way in Chan Buddhism. First, self-realization of intrinsic nature. The Chan way stresses that a person should determine things on his or her own, and not to be led around by the nose or swayed easily by the opinions of others. Self-realization of intrinsic nature is important. With his own soaring determination, a man will not simply copy the way of the Tathagata. This is what characterizes the Chan master's self-realization. Nanying was a very famous Chan master. A skeptical devotee sought out the master to debate about Chan. After the two met, Master Nanying did not utter a word, but instead poured a cup of tea for the lay Buddhist. The cup was full, but the master continued to pour and pour and pour. Finally, the devotee could no longer restrain himself. "Master," he shouted, "the cup is full. Stop pouring." Only then did the master speak. "Look," he said, smiling, "the cup of your heart is just as full and complacent. How will my Chan method ever fit?" With but one sentence, the devotee was left speechless, unable to reply. In the Chan way, self-realization of intrinsic nature is a form of self-awakening, not egotistical self-satisfaction. A scholar asked the master, "Where is the Buddha?" "Think about it. Where is the Buddha? Do you think the Buddha is in the Western Pure Land of ultimate bliss? Do you think the Buddha is in the Eastern Pure Land of azure radiance? Actually, the Buddha is everywhere. The Buddha is on Vulture Peak. but you need not journey far to find him. Vulture Peak is in your own heart. Someone asked the master, "What is the Buddha?" The Chan master looked at him, opened his hands, and said, "I can't tell you. If I told you, you wouldn't believe me. You are the expert. How could I not believe you?" "All right," said the master, nodding. "What did you just ask? Ask me again." "I ask, what is the Buddha?" "You are. You are the Buddha." "Oh, no. All of us are just average people. How can you suddenly say that I am the Buddha?" In the Chan school, the self-realization of intrinsic nature is a way to transform one's sensibilities into intrinsic being. Recognizing this will allow you to be a Buddha or a Bodhisattva without inventing special names or flattery. The most important points about the self-realization of intrinsic nature are: how to sustain it, and how do I know that I am a Buddha? A Chan master's reply: a cataract over the eyes can make a non-existent flower seem to appear, but by forsaking false conditions, one becomes a Buddha. A speck of gold dazzles the eyes, but if it gets in your eye, then it is like a cataract, creating the appearance of a non-existent flower, the form of which is unclear. If you can remove delusions and false ideas from your mind, your true mind will appear, which is your own Tathagata. Buddhism teaches one to uphold the way, to cultivate oneself through right practice in the face of illusory thoughts. Someone asked Master Wei Quan, "Where is the way?" "The way," replied Wei Quan, "is before your eyes." "Then why don't I see it?" "You cannot see it because you cling to the self." "So it's my clinging that makes it impossible for me to see the way and the truth?" "Master, can you see the way and the truth?" "By clinging to distinctions such as you and I, I'll be even less likely to see the way. If I make no distinctions between you and I, and have no illusory thoughts of self and other, will I be able to see the way and the truth?" "Oh, if there is no I and no you, then who will see the way and the truth?" We often say that we must cultivate ourselves and the way. Where is the way? It is right beneath our feet. If we are to walk it, then we must free ourselves from individual views and perceptions and see everything with a universal and eternal vision. This is comparable to the Confucian idea that man is an integral part of nature. Teaching, learning, and upholding the way in Chan Buddhism are unique. Confirming existence is incorrect. Confirming non-existence is also incorrect. Neither form nor emptiness is absolute truth. Chan makes no distinction between form and emptiness, and does not avoid form and wisdom, thereby exhausting the causes of false conditions. Pure and noble, Chan rejects both extremes. Attaining self-realization of intrinsic nature is verification for the Chan practitioner and is a wonderful way of attaining Tathagata Gabbat. Chan master Nan Quan once propounded a problem to Lu Heng, a government official. "Once, a person raised a goose in a bottle. Gradually, the goose grew inside the bottle, but the mouth of the bottle was very small, and the goose couldn't get out. Tell me, how can you get the goose out without breaking the bottle or harming the goose?" Everyone present wondered how to get the goose out of the bottle without breaking it. Lu Heng paced back and forth, all the while knitting his brow, trying to come up with a solution. This is what is known as falling into a mental pattern of making distinctions, which is not Chan. Chan means attaining self-realization. So Chan Master Nan Quan at once shouted, "Lu Heng." "Here," replied Lu Heng. "Then isn't it out?" asked Chan Master Nanchuan, laughing. Why is your mind as restricted as the goose? Do you think that our bodies or our homes will allow us to dwell in tranquility? Your minds must be more carefree and open in order to get out of the bottle, out of the ivory tower. Why let yourselves be so restricted by life? Why be tied down by your body? Although the Chan Master engages in silent retreat, and the closed room is small, the mind is as expansive as the Dharmakaya, the Dharma body, where coming and going are unrestricted. If a prisoner in a jail understands Chan, though he or she has lost his freedom and is imprisoned, he or she can still soar freely. The freedom afforded by self-realization is something that few of us can attain. The original face of Chan is not defiled or pure, nor does it increase or diminish. In seeking the way, we must be as natural as the clouds and water. You need not painstakingly seek it outside. Look inside and realizing your intrinsic nature. When the mind is purified, the Chan way will appear naturally of its own accord. A disciple of Chan Master Yunmen once asked him, "There are three kinds of sick people in the world, the blind, deaf, and mute. How am I to teach them, Chan?" "Since you have come to ask for instruction," shouted the master immediately, "why haven't you paid me due respect?" The disciple immediately bowed. The moment he lifted his head, the master took up a stick and struck him a blow. Surprised, the follower hurriedly stepped back. "You're not blind," laughed Master Yunmen. "Come here, don't be afraid. Come before me." The disciple, not yet having quite recovered from his astonishment, obeyed and took a few steps forward. "You can hear," laughed Yunmen. "You're not deaf. Can you give a Dharma talk?" "No, I can't." "Oh, so you're not mute," roared Yunmen with laughter. Our eyes, ears, noses, tongues, and bodies are all sick. We have eyes but can't see. We have ears but cannot hear. We have mouths but cannot speak. And we have bodies but do not know how to take care of them. Due to spiritual blindness, we all end up blind, deaf, and dumb. Chan Master Yunmen's teaching method was like a sharp knife used to excise false understanding, revealing the bright and pristine ground of the mind. People today possess five sound sensory organs and live safe and healthy lives. They create trouble for themselves because the ground of their mind is obscured. Many parents do everything in their power to send their children to the United States from other countries to study, and then feel uneasy about it. Then they do everything possible to visit their children. But what do they do when they get to the United States? They are handicapped. They are like the deaf because they cannot understand what people say to them. They are like the blind because they cannot read English. They are mutes because they cannot speak. And they are like cripples because they cannot get around by car. When their daughter-in-law has a baby, they look after it. When they were young, they raised their own children. And now, in their old age, they raise their grandchildren, once again becoming a filial son or daughter. Not understanding Chan, life's difficulties increase. Many people are hindered by ignorance. They don't know how to reflect upon themselves or how to use their own intrinsic nature. Instead, they use the six perceptual faculties: the eyes, ears, nose, tongue, body, and mind, to grasp this illusory world. Of course, they will not be able to dwell in tranquility. As the Diamond Sutra says, a person should give rise to a pure heart without dwelling in form. A person should give rise to that heart without dwelling in sound, smell, taste, tangible objects, or dharmas. A person should give rise to that heart without dwelling anywhere. These are profoundly significant words. The Chan master extinguishes external conditions and is not angered or enamored of the world around him, energetically proceeding toward the realization of the Great Way. His mind will not be confused by illusory sights and sounds. His mind dwells in purity, and thus he attains the way. Chan master Shi Wu had a friend who was a thief. His friend could not mend his bad ways. One time, he stole something that belonged to Chan master Shi Wu. The master caught him and questioned, "How many times have you stolen?" "I can't count the number of times. Hundreds and thousands of times." "How much have you stolen?" "Not much. 800 to 1,000 yuan each time." "You're not much of a thief," laughed the master. "If it were me, I could steal what I want without lifting a finger. If I did lift a finger, I'd steal a lot more." "Excuse me for underestimating you," said the thief, astounded. "You are more experienced than I am. Please, will you teach me how to steal?" "Aren't there treasures aplenty right here?" asked Master Shi Wu, suddenly stretching out his hand towards the thief's heart, as if to take something. "After I steal the treasures from here, I'll enjoy them for the rest of my days. Only by mastering our minds can we enjoy them as long as we live. What is Chan? It is our true mind. What could be better than the true mind?" Chan Master Long Ya wrote a poem on the realization of the self. "A room, a bed, a thatched roof overhead, a bottle, a bowl, one life. Though a road to the village runs before my door, when has someone else's house ever been mine?" For a Chan master, a room, a bed, and a thatched roof overhead are enough in life. A plain and natural life. Although the road outside the door runs to another village, other people's houses will never be ours. Why must we go outside to grasp at conditions? As nice as paradise is, it is not mine. Though my house is cold and lowly, it is where I make my life, and I am content with it. As the saying goes, a corner of gold or silver is not as good as my own poor corner. Not knowing one's original mind, studying the Dharma is useless. Not knowing one's true nature, the way is distant. Attaining the self-realization of intrinsic nature and realizing that the mind is inherently pure is the goal of Chan. By not becoming enamored of things or being sad about one's lot, but by being carefree and leading a tranquil life without desires, at ease and unobstructed, one enters a bright, open place.